Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are going to touch on a subject again that we've touched on before, but we really haven't gone on this side of it. And, you know, it is Wellness Wednesday, the second Wednesday on G's Power Hour. We have talked about heart issues before, but we really haven't delved into heart disease. So we're going to do that today. We are pleased and blessed to welcome back Dr. Taiwan Tillman, cardiologist. How are you doing? Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Is he not there? Oh, my gosh. He's not there. So I know we were supposed to talk about it. So,
I'm here.
Are you? Oh, hey there. Hi there. Ho there. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
I'm doing quite well. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule. Really appreciate it. So,
of course.
Well, got a lot to put into this show today. Like I always say,
we always try
to put those 10 pounds of potatoes in that 5-pound bag. But we're going to do what we can with this hour. So today we are touching on heart failure. And so I'm going to stop talking. I'm actually going to let you just take it away.
Great. Okay. So, yes, we're going to do heart failure today. And it is, so we've talked a lot about heart disease and just as in general in the past. We haven't focused specifically on heart failure. So we sort of were at a 50,000-foot view of heart failure and the things we talked about before. But today we're going to try and get a little bit more granular about heart failure. It is a very complex topic, and it's something I think partly because as medical professionals, we don't always explain it to patients and their families where there's a lot of confusion about heart failure. I get patients that I see all the time, and they're asking me, do I have heart failure or do I not? They said I did. I don't think I do. Or somebody else said I didn't. And a lot of times it's because of the way we explain it or fail to explain it. But I'm going to try to make it as clear as mud today if I can, okay? And so
okay.
The first thing is...
I thought it was already clear as mud. We're going to try to thin out the mud a little bit.
We'll try that. So the first question that I think we need to answer is what exactly is heart failure or congestive heart failure? And long story short, to put it as simply as I can, the heart is nothing but a pump. The heart pumps blood, and it pumps blood. The right side of the heart pumps blood to the lungs, and after the blood gets oxygen from the lungs, it goes to the left side of the heart, and the left side of the heart pumps blood to the body. So most of the time when we're talking about heart failure, we're talking about the left side of the heart because that is the main pumping chamber that pumps blood to the body and the organs. The right side of the heart just pumps blood to the lungs, okay? So when we think heart failure, think left side of the heart, number one. So that's the left ventricle, the left pumping chamber. Okay, now, heart failure means the heart is not pumping efficiently or effectively. The heart isn't moving blood like it should. Now, that can be for one of two reasons. It can be because the pumping function of the heart is really weakened. In other words, it's not pushing out blood like it should. We call that the ejection fraction. Normally, an ejection fraction is about 55%, meaning every time the heart beats, it'll pump out about 55% of the blood in the chamber. That is normal, not 100%. So remember, 55% is normal. And when you have congestive heart failure due to a weakened heart, that number goes down. It may be 25%, 15%. Anyway, either way, weakened heart. That's one type of heart failure, called what we call systolic heart failure, meaning the heart is weak. The other type of heart failure, however, you can have even if the heart function, the pumping function of the left ventricle is normal, and that's called diastolic heart failure. With diastolic heart failure, that means the heart actually has trouble filling with blood. So it can be that the heart muscle is stiff but still squeezes like it should. And so even if the heart squeezes like it should but the heart muscle is stiff, that means it has difficulty filling with blood because it is so stiff. So the volume and the compliance of the heart is decreased because of the stiffness, even though the pumping function is normal. And one of the things that we're starting to realize is that type of heart failure is becoming increasingly common. And so long story short, heart failure is the left ventricle not pumping blood effectively, either because the heart muscle is weak or because the heart muscle is stiff. Does that part make sense?
Yes, sir. I guess that also helps me understand a little bit about the systolic and diastolic numbers, I guess, when you're checking things like the blood pressure.
Yes, and simply put there, the systolic blood pressure is the pressure when the heart is squeezing. The diastolic blood pressure is the blood pressure in between beats when the heart muscle is relaxed.
Okay.
Okay.
And the main concern is the systolic.
Most of the time, the main concern is systolic. As you get older, most people's diastolic blood pressure gets lower and systolic blood pressure increases, and that's just, physiologically what happens for most people. Okay, so we have a definition of question?
No. I'm going to let you go ahead, but I just wanted to know. You talk about heart muscles, getting weak or stiff. Are we as a society maybe, I know we're doing a lot of things wrong, okay? We're not eating right, we're not exercising, we're not drinking enough water, and we're not doing, we've got too much stress and all that kind of stuff. However, I wanted to ask also, could one of the factors that affects that be the fact that we're actually pushing ourselves to live longer than we actually maybe should be pushing ourselves to live?
Of course. Well, I don't know. I don't know if you want to say pushing yourself to live,
what I mean is, like, we're always looking at things that are going to prolong life, and maybe, in some of our cases,
quality
versus and maybe we're putting too much pressure on ourselves to try to live, they lived until 100, I'm going to try to live until 101, or I'm going to try to live in 110, 20, 30, whatever. Versus just making sure that the heart is healthy and we are healthy and we're just enjoying or doing our best with the life that we have.
Well, there's certainly some relevance there, because one of the things that we are seeing is we're seeing increased hospitalizations for heart failure. In fact, heart failure is the most expensive single diagnosis for our Medicare and our health system in the U.S. It costs billions of dollars every year, more than any other single disorder, just because it has become so common, and also because there are patients that have heart failure tend to have repeated hospitalizations, either because it's inadequately treated or the patients don't follow the recommendations or they don't take their medications. But it costs our hospital, our healthcare system, more than any other illness, and it's a big problem for us. And one of the reasons that we're starting to see more heart failure is, as you mentioned, people are living longer. And heart failure tends to be most common in people as they get older and people that have had multiple medical problems. And also, we've gotten better. We've talked about heart attacks and heart disease in the past, and we've gotten better at treating that. And so people that used to maybe have heart attacks and die, a lot of times you save them. And so sometimes they end up with chronic damage of the heart leading to heart failure, but we can sort of walk them along, and they can live a long time after that. Whereas, years ago they would have died. So some ways advancement in our medical care of heart disease has created more heart failure patients. And also, when you just talk about advancements in medical care across the board, helping people live longer, we're seeing more heart failure because our overall population is aging. And so we are seeing more heart failure. It's becoming increasingly expensive, and that's just not a problem here in the U.S. It's worldwide. And so heart failure is something that, we need to come to grips with. And that's why we're talking about it today. And so I guess the next thing that I want to sort of explain is sort of exactly what happens, what leads to heart failure. Because a lot of times people, you know, you hear the word heart failure, and then I give you a description for it that the heart doesn't pump well, but how does that present as a person, or how do you know if you have it, or what kind of symptoms should you look for in your family members? And I'm going to try and explain this. We've already explained that the right side of the heart pumps blood to the lungs and the left side of the heart pumps blood to the body. So typically when we're talking about heart problems, even if it's heart attacks, most of the time we're talking about the left chamber, left ventricle, which pumps blood to the body. Now imagine that, just imagine that you have a little train, and a train has four stops. It starts in your legs. The next stop is the right side of your heart. The next stop is your lungs, and the next stop is the left side of your heart. So you have legs, right side, lungs, left side, and then the train loops back around and starts back at legs. Okay? So those are your four stops. Now imagine that train's going, starting with your legs, and then it goes to the right side of the heart, goes through your lungs, goes to the left side of your heart, and everything's going fine. The train's just making that loop, making that loop, making that loop. Then all of a sudden, an accident happens. The accident happens in the left side of the heart, the left pumping chamber. When that happens, that accident happens, the train stops. All the other cars are going to back up from that point backwards. So you're going to get backup of the trains into your lungs first, right? Because it's lungs and then left heart. So the train crashes in the left heart, then the other train's going to back up in the lungs. And if you imagine that being in real life, when the blood flowing through the heart and flowing through your legs, if the blood stops flowing or decreases flowing in the left ventricle, then the blood's going to back up into your lungs. So that's why patients that have heart failure get short of breath, because that fluid backs up into their lungs and they get fluid in their lungs and all of a sudden they can't breathe. And then that's why you use the water pills, the diuretics like Lasix, to help get the fluid off, and that's why the breathing gets better after that. Now you can imagine if the fluid backs up into your lungs, on the other side of your lungs is the right heart and then your legs. So that's the reason why if the fluid goes even farther, you'll get fluid in your lungs and then swelling in your legs. And so that's why heart failure causes fluid in your lungs and then swelling in your legs. And then you give the water pill, decreases the fluid, and then the swelling goes away. So that's why a weakened pump or a stiffened pump that isn't pumping blood forward effectively, everything backs up. And that's why you get the symptom of the shortness of breath and the symptom of the swelling. So the two cardinal symptoms most of the time of heart failure, and I should say decompensated heart failure, is swelling in the legs and fluid in the lungs causing shortness of breath. Yes.
So I want to ask about, you said Lasix, and there's others, which are basically like diuretics. So
correct. They're all diuretics.
Correct. Okay. And there are foods also like, and forgive me if I'm mistaken, but like orange juice and asparagus and other things that are diuretics as well. So can you talk a little bit for a second about the pros and cons of diuretics as medication and in food?
There's no comparison as far as the medications that we use for diuretics or heart failure, and then some of the things that you can ingest that are, you know, foods and beverages that are diuretics. And so it's night and day. So you'll barely notice the diuretic effect of most foods. The things that you will probably notice most commonly that have a strong diuretic effect, alcohol, caffeine. But as far as the other foods that have a little bit of a diuretic effect, it's very, very mild compared to what we need for patients to have heart failure.
Okay.
And believe it or not, it really is, the diuretics are not the mainstay of medical therapy for heart failure. They help, but they're not the mainstay. And I should take a second at this point to say there is what we call heart failure and decompensated heart failure. So if you're a patient that has been diagnosed with heart failure and have been hospitalized with heart failure and you have fluid overload and they put you in the hospital and got all this fluid off and then you feel back to normal and everything's going fine and you're taking your medications and you feel good, you have a diagnosis of heart failure, but it's asymptomatic because you're treated. That is in comparison to decompensated heart failure, where you're symptomatic, fluid overloaded, and need to go to the hospital to get rid of the fluid. So either way, and that's one of the questions people often ask, you get hospitalized with heart failure, they get all the fluid off and you go home and say, I feel good, do I still have heart failure? Yes, you have heart failure, it's just treated asymptomatic and compensated. But you're at risk for having another episode of decompensated heart failure where you get fluid overloaded and are in the hospital if you don't do everything you're supposed to do to prevent that. And so once you have heart failure, you will have it, you know, it's pretty chronic. It's a condition that you have. It's not that it goes away. It's like if you have migraine headaches. Well, do I have migraine headaches? You do. You're not having a headache right now, but, you know, you have migraine headaches. So you have a diagnosis of migraine headaches. Sort of the same thing. So just because you have congestive heart failure doesn't mean you're always symptomatic from it. Very often it's a relapsing problem that you're at risk for. But depending on severity, you may not always be symptomatic. So let's talk a little bit about the prevalence of heart failure, the epidemiology of heart failure. And like I said, it's the most common reason for admission in United States hospitals. Once again, because we have an aging population, heart failure is becoming more common, and then they're often relapsing admissions. You know, there's some patients that are, you know, in the hospital every several months for heart failure. A lot of times it's because they won't do what they're supposed to do. But sometimes it's because, you know, the physicians don't do their part. And sometimes it takes a lot to keep those patients out of the hospital, particularly if they have severe heart failure, because they need to be monitored at home. They need daily weights. They need home health. They need someone to help them take their meds. They need education on diet and lifestyle and all these other things, which the hospitals and the physicians, you know, are supposed to provide that stuff. We're not always able to. And sometimes smaller hospitals or, you know, a doctor that is a single practitioner that doesn't have any help in his office, they don't have the bandwidth to be able to do all those things for all of their patients. And so sometimes patients fall through the crack. But it is a very common illness, and it is, and it costs our Medicare system a lot of money. And it's something that in many ways these hospitalizations are avoidable and can be prevented. And so it's a big part of what Medicare does in order to sort of try and reduce their cost. Heart failure is one of the things that they target because it is their biggest expenditure as far as diagnoses for their patients. And so generally around 6.2 million patients at any given point in the U.S. have heart failure. And in a given year, there's almost 500,000 that are newly diagnosed with heart failure. And so that begs the question, what causes heart failure? What are the underlying things that create heart failure? The most common cause of heart failure in general is blockages, heart attacks. So you can imagine if somebody has a heart attack, when you do that, what happens is you damage a part of your heart muscle. That part of heart muscle no longer pumps. And so all of a sudden your normal ejection fraction that we mentioned earlier, 55%, is now 30%. So now you have a weakened heart. Heart doesn't pump blood forward like it should. You end up with heart failure type symptoms. So that's the most common cause and we call that ischemic heart failure, meaning that you've had a heart attack or a blockage. You treat that in general by, number one, trying to restore the blockage, get blood flow back to the area of heart muscle to minimize the damage to the heart muscle. And then, so that's one category all by itself. Another category is what we call structural heart disease, where you may have a bad heart valve or, you know, some type of congenital heart problem, something goes physically wrong with your heart, and that causes heart failure. You repair the problem, you repair the valve, or fixes that problem. But the other type of heart failure, the other causes of heart failure that we see are many, and a lot of times we have patients present with heart failure that we don't know why. And one thing that's probably been in the news a lot the past few years is COVID and heart failure. You can get COVID. COVID can infect the heart muscle, and you can get what's called a viral cardiomyopathy, and your heart muscle can be damaged from then on. Some of those patients even go on to need transplants, and that's nothing new. It hasn't been just COVID. It's been COVID. We've seen it with the flu over the years. We've seen it with common cold virus over the years. So it's been in the news a lot over the past few years because COVID has been in the news, but we've seen viral causes of heart failure as far as we've been diagnosing heart failure, so that's not anything new. But that is another cause. Other causes that are common, untreated high blood pressure is common. Chemotherapy can cause it. Genetics, family history can cause it. So there are a lot of different underlying causes of heart failure. But this, regardless of what the cause is, very often the treatment is very, very similar. So for causes like a bad valve or blockages, obviously you fix the physical structural problem with the heart. And then all those other issues, whether it's chemotherapy, drugs like cocaine, or, you know, untreated hypertension where the heart starts to fail, all of those you treat with medications, medical therapy. So there's a ton of different causes of heart failure that all go in the same basket that are treated with a certain group of medications, and those patients tend to do quite well in those cases. So I've been talking for a while, and I've given you a lot of information.
Yes,
do you have any
you
questions
have.
So far?
And I do have a question, but we're going to take a quick break. So go get a little water because I got more questions. We're here with Dr. Taiwan Tillman, cardiologist. It is Wellness Wednesday on G's Power Hour. If you have questions or comments, the number is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar. Or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are here with Dr. Taiwan Tillman, cardiologist on Wellness Wednesday here. The number is 516-387-1944 if you have any questions. We're talking a little bit about heart failure. And what I wanted to talk to you or ask you about, Dr. Tillman, are blockages that you mentioned, which my understanding, some of those blockages are called caused by, I guess, plaque buildup, and you know, that's why also cholesterol is such a big concern. Can you talk a little bit about how can diet and exercise reverse some of that, or is it
can
once
diet-
it's there, is it just there?
For the most part, once it's there, it's just there.
It's just
now,
there. Okay.
But one of the but that's not necessarily a bad thing. So, what plaque is grab your hand, cut your arm, you get a scar, and it heals over, and that scar is raised a little bit. That is a response to injury. Plaque is the same thing inside your artery. When there's an injury to the wall of your artery, then your body tries to repair that, and part of the way it tries to repair that is by sending cells there that heal injury, that create scar tissue. And part of a plaque is connective tissue or scar tissue. But the other thing that happens is when there's an injury in the wall of your artery, there's cholesterol floating in your blood. That cholesterol gets into that injury, into the wall. And the body sees that, the artery sees that as a part of the injury, and it tries to wall it off. And so it walls it off by creating a little capsule around it. And so if you look at a plaque, the center of the plaque is typically cholesterol, and then it has some connective tissue like scar tissue and so forth around it, and then a calcium plaque on the top of it. And that's why that's the genesis of a plaque. It starts with an injury to the wall, cholesterol particles get into the wall, the body responds to that by trying to wall it off and protect your body from the cholesterol, so it walls off that little area of cholesterol, and then it creates a plaque. And so what can happen over time if you change your diet, you exercise, you take medications to lower your cholesterol, you fix your blood sugar and all these other things, then the composition of that plaque will change. In other words, the cholesterol center by more connective tissue, and it becomes what we call an organized plaque. And if you have a plaque that has a lot of cholesterol in its center versus a plaque that has a small amount of cholesterol in the center that are exactly the same size, the one with all the cholesterol in the center is much more likely to cause a heart attack or a stroke than the one that has very little cholesterol in the center. And so you can change the composition of a plaque from the high-risk cholesterol-heavy one to the one that has very little cholesterol. That becomes a low-risk plaque. but they don't necessarily go away. You change the composition. And so that's one of the things that we're often after when we're treating patients with cholesterol medications and all these things that we're trying to do to reduce the risk of heart attack. Unfortunately, we get most of those patients after they've already had a heart attack. But it plays a big role in prevention of future events, but not necessarily make the plaque go away. So we're not always just trying to make plaque disappear. We're just trying to make sure that the plaque doesn't cause problems.
Okay. All right. So who's at greatest risk?
For heart failure. So
yes.
People at risk for heart failure, as you get older, your risk for heart failure is higher. That's because as you get older, your risk for heart attack is higher. As you get older, your risk for most medical illnesses are higher.
Mm-hmm.
Also, as you get older, your heart muscle gets stiffer. If you look at your skin, if you look at person's skin, you pull on it, it's very elastic. It snaps back. That's because it's still very soft and what we call pliable. Okay? Now, as you get older, you pull on your skin, particularly somebody that's really ill, you pull on your skin, you know, it'll just stretch and it'll slowly snap back. And that's because it's lost a lot of its elastic properties, and that elastic tissue has gotten replaced by more scar-type tissue that is not so flexible and compliant. Same thing happens in the heart. So as you get older, the heart muscle is not as flexible. It gets stiffer, even if the pumping function is normal. And so we mentioned what we call diastolic heart failure, where you can have heart failure due to a stiffened heart rather than a weakened heart. And so older folks are also at very high risk for that. So most of the patients that have diastolic heart failure are older patients, and most of the patients that have systolic heart failure are also older patients because of the causes being, you know, longstanding untreated high blood pressure, heart attacks, and all these other things and that you tend to see as you get older. And so in general, heart failure is a disease of the elderly. That's why it's such a big cost output for Medicare, and that's why they have such a big program at trying to reduce heart failure readmissions and to diagnose heart failure early. And so it's typically our older folks. And unfortunately, a lot of times the way you treat heart failure, now that's who's at risk, older folks. But how do you prevent heart failure is the real question. And you don't prevent heart failure in somebody that already has it. You prevent heart failure before they get it. So
okay.
You prevent heart failure in younger patients. So that's the real question is, how do you prevent heart failure? I mean, we're always focused on treating, but the real way that you'll make headway reducing the cost of Medicare and our whole healthcare system with regards to heart failure is to prevent it. So how do you prevent heart failure? Well, that's obvious, right? We talked about some of the causes, with heart attack being one of the common causes. So what are the risks for heart attack? We've talked about that a bunch of times. Diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, obesity, sedentary lifestyle, smoking. You know, you start to minimize those things, and then the biggest chunk of heart failure being heart attack starts to go away. The next one, hypertension, is another big cause of heart failure, either because if hypertension goes untreated for too long, the heart will fail where it gets really weak, and you have the decreased pumping type of heart failure. And also, if you have heart failure that's untreated for a long time, the heart muscle can get really, really stiff because the heart muscle has to work really hard all the time. And just like any other muscle, the harder it works, the stiffer it gets and the bigger it gets. And so for the heart, you don't want a big, thick heart. You want a thin, soft, compliant heart. Well, if you have untreated high blood pressure and your heart gets stiff, then that can cause a diastolic type of heart failure. So high blood pressure can cause both a weakened heart type of heart failure and a stiff heart type of heart failure. So hypertension is the next thing. And we know that there are tons of patients out there that have undiagnosed, untreated hypertension, or even diagnosed hypertension where it's not treated appropriately. So probably about 50% of people that have hypertension are inadequately treated. And so that's a big problem. So even if you only just focus on those two things, as time goes by, reducing the risk of heart attacks, reducing the prevalence of untreated hypertension, that will make great progress in decreasing the prevalence of heart failure in the world, period, to be honest with you. And so it's really an idea of prevention. But if you tell somebody that is 40 years old that feels perfectly healthy that we need to do some things to prevent your risk of heart failure in 20 years, they're going to say, I feel great. My blood pressure runs a little high, but it doesn't bother me. So they may or may not take their meds, you know. And so it's hard to get people to see that far forward. But if we can make that more of just a routine part of our healthcare system, where we are looking more for prevention as opposed to treatment after the fact, if people get used to that being the norm, then everybody will just buy in. But right now it's not the norm. And so it's difficult for people to buy into that when they're younger and feeling healthy and asymptomatic.
We are here with Dr. Taiwan Tillman on G's Power Hour. This is Wellness Wednesday, and we're talking about heart failure. If you have a question or a comment, the number is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
At Vintage Labs Collection, we are a multifaceted team of medical professionals dedicated to delivering the best quality products to patients. Our mission is to deliver the best supplement and patient outcomes in healthcare environments and consumer homes. Chat with our consulting pharmacists by visiting our website at www.vintagelabscollection.com. Supplements are not highly regulated, but Vintage Labs holds the standards higher than most.
Good afternoon. Hi there. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. It is Wellness Wednesday here on G's Power Hour. And the number, if you have questions or comments, is 516-387-1944. We are talking heart failure today with Dr. Taiwan Tillman. And so I wanted to ask you a question because I keep running back in my head about the heart getting stiff. And, you know, there's this phrase about if you don't use it, you lose it. Is that the case with the heart? Is there a way to keep the heart from stiffening by any type of particular activity or something? Or is that just something that occurs over time and with, I guess, the assault that you do with the diet and, you know, stress and other things?
Well, I can't definitively say that because diastolic heart failure is one of those things. When all the research that's been done over the years that we have all the good data on has been mostly systolic heart failure, where we're talking about a weakened pump of the heart. Diastolic heart failure is something that's really started to be researched a lot more in the last 5 to 10 years. And so a lot of questions that you would ask me about it, we don't have. We know what it is, and we know sort of how to treat it, but we don't have a lot of data on it. You know, at first we just thought you treat diastolic heart failure the same way you treat systolic heart failure, but we're starting to realize that that is not the case.
No.
But certainly hypertension is one of those things that makes the heart muscle stiff. We know that. And age is one of the other things. But the most important part about diastolic heart failure is that we recognize patients with it and that we do some of the things that we know we can do to sort of mitigate them from having symptoms and hospitalizations related to it.
One of the things you mentioned also was genetics. And I'm just curious in terms of, so if you are genetically predispositioned toward, let's say, having some sort of heart problem, do you have to do, I guess, more in the way of diet and exercise? Or, I mean, is there anything that you can do? Or, you know, you just got to kind of buckle up and get ready for whatever's coming?
Well, it's there's not a lot you can do. So let's take an example. There's what we call hypertrophic cardiomyopathies, and that can cause heart failure. And those are some of the there's lots of different types of hypertrophic cardiomyopathies, but and sometimes they're genetically inherited. Sometimes it's just something that you're born with as a heart defect that's not necessarily genetically inherited. But either way, it's a structural abnormality of the heart. And are there some things that you can do to sort of mitigate the effects of that? Yes. So if you have, for example, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, you do want to make sure that your heart isn't under any undue stress. So you want to make sure that that patient's blood pressure is perfect. There are hypertrophic cardiomyopathies that are where the patients are at risk of abnormal heart rhythms that cause sudden death. And you've heard of those situations before where young athletes have sudden death. There are people that aren't even athletes have sudden death. And that is another type of, and that's very often genetically inherited. So a lot of times family history is important. So if there is a family member that has some type of heart failure that happens at a young age and it's unclear why, a lot of times that's one of the times when your doctor or your cardiologist will start to say, this may be something genetic and maybe something where other family members need to be screened. And so, but it's not something where people should be just going out and just randomly getting screened for genetic types or genetic causes of heart failure, because it's rare, very rare, and that would be very low yield. But if there are multiple family members that have a certain type of heart failure, then that's certainly something you want to look into. But in general, that's one of the less frequent types, more rare types of heart failure that we see, the genetic types. But that does lead to the question, sort of, what kind of symptoms should we be looking for when we talk about heart failure? And some of those we've already mentioned. There's the obvious ones. The most obvious is leg swelling. And I guess probably the first thing I would want to mention is all leg swelling is not heart failure. In fact, most leg swelling isn't heart failure. And I see patients all the time that will have a little bit of swelling because, you know, they went on a flight or had a long trip. And they will say, you know, I'm worried that I have heart failure because I have swelling. Most of the time, that's just what we call dependent swelling, where they've been sitting for a long time, and that's normal. You take a long, you know, an eight-hour international flight, you're going to have swelling in your legs. And so that's not heart failure. But the type of heart failure that is, the type of symptoms that are of concern, if you have swelling in your legs and shortness of breath, swelling your legs and you lie down at night and you get short of breath, you have to sit up because you get short of breath, feel like you're drowning. Swelling your legs that goes not just below the knee, that starts to come up the thigh and into the hips. Swelling your legs where your weight is actually increasing. So if you go on a flight and you get swelling your legs, you didn't have any increase in weight. You just had a redistribution of fluid where gravity pulled fluid down in your legs just from sitting for a long time, as opposed to swelling in your legs that and you notice that your weight has increased by 5 pounds in the past several days, or swelling your legs that overnight when you elevate your legs doesn't go down, or that even continues to progress. Also, if you have, you know, may not everybody gets swelling in their legs when they get fluid overloaded. Sometimes they feel fullness in their belly, so their belly gets tight. And they notice when they eat, they get full really quickly just because there's not enough room in their abdomen for food to go because there's all the swelling and fluid in their abdomen. And so one of the things that we always do with heart failure patients is we have them monitor their weights daily, because you'll know even before you start to get significant swelling that's obviously visible, you'll notice that your weight starts to climb, you know, 1, 2, 3 pounds a day in consecutive days. At that point, you know you're starting to retain fluid. So the most obvious symptom that you'll see in someone with heart failure is swelling. And the next is, you know, shortness of breath or a change in exercise tolerance. So we go to the mailbox every day to get the mail and come back to the house. Now all of a sudden I go to the mailbox and I get to the mailbox and I have to sit there and rest for a little bit because I'm getting short of breath. And I don't know why. And so that's another common symptom. So the two hallmarks are a swelling and shortness of breath that keys you into possibly having heart failure. There are obviously a lot of other causes, and but that should cause someone to seek care to sort of figure out why they're having these problems. Those aren't problems that you should just ignore, because a lot of times it can be something underlying that's quite serious. And so if you have those symptoms, what do? You call your doctor. You go see your doctor, and your doctor will most likely order some blood work on you. Sometimes anemia, low blood counts, can cause the same sort of shortness of breath that you may get with heart failure. And if your blood count's low, then they'll fix that, and a lot of times that'll take care of the problem. Sometimes swelling can be due to a blood clot in your leg, so that sometimes they'll scan for that or do blood tests to at least screen for blood clots in your legs. Sometimes swelling is due to bad veins in your legs. So if you have swelling, you have varicose veins. Sometimes it can be just an issue with the veins, and that's something that can be taken care of. Or if you don't mind having swollen legs and varicose veins, then nothing needs to be done about it. And but if they're really concerned that it's heart failure, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to order an echocardiogram, which is an ultrasound of the heart. And what that shows is the pumping function of the heart. And we talked about ejection fraction earlier. So it'll look for whether or not the heart is weak or the pumping function is normal. It'll also look for whether or not the heart muscle is stiff and thickened, or whether it's compliant and flexible. It'll look at the function of the valves. It'll look at the sizes of the chambers. It'll measure pressures inside the heart, pressures inside the lungs. So that's really the most important test that we use to diagnose heart failure and to manage heart failure, is an echocardiogram also, which is an ultrasound of the heart. And then if we do diagnose heart failure in that setting, the next question is why? And then we start to go through the steps of trying to figure out what may have caused the heart failure, particularly if it's a systolic or weakened heart as opposed to diastolic.
Okay. So I was curious, you know, sometimes other people can see things that you can't see that are happening to you. For example, I mean, not heart-related, but there's a case on one of the home improvement shows where a viewer looked at someone and said, you have a thyroid issue, and sure enough, they got checked, and they found out they had a thyroid issue. Are there, let's say, telltale signs that you can see or spot on a loved one, maybe not necessarily by just looking at them, but, you know, observing behavior, or like you even said, breathing or something?
Well, there are several things. And so what individuals will do, a lot of times problems like this will have an insidious sort of slow onset. And what people do is they will adjust their activity to minimize their symptoms. So say there's someone that has heart failure, and I told you the symptoms can be shortness of breath, decrease or change in exercise tolerance, inability to lie flat in the bed. That's a symptom that we call orthopnea. And so whenever they lie flat, they get really short of breath. And so what people start to do is they start to do less. So you'll notice normally someone that maybe had things that they did on a daily basis, went shopping or, you know, all of a sudden they go to Walmart and they use the cart, or, you know, when you go shopping with them and you go somewhere with them, you know, they're constantly asking you to slow down or wait up on them. You notice they have a bed that they've slept in for years. All of a sudden they're sleeping on the couch or sleeping in a recliner. And, you know, you ask why, and, you know, a lot of times they'll say, I just feel better sitting in my recliner. But then later you find out that if they do lie flat, they have to sit up because they feel like they're drowning. And so it's subtle things like that. And to them, it's not a big deal because it's happened over a period of, you know, 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, where they slowly made these changes. They've slowly stopped doing things that they normally do. They've slowly stopped, you know, walking to the mailbox without stopping. They have to stop, or they plan it so that they can do it, you know, do it in their car when they come back home. And so they start making changes that may not be that obvious to them because they're just accommodating their symptoms, but may notice it, you know, right away. Things like, you know, if their legs are constantly swollen, they may hide them. They may, you know, wear longer pants or do things to sort of conceal them. And so you have to keep an eye out for those things. But it is interesting that you mentioned that, because sometimes, you know, it takes an outsider to see it, because the person that's actually there, they see the gradual change because they're seeing it happen slowly over time. Whereas someone that saw you 3 months ago and then they see you today and you're completely different from what you looked like 3 months ago, it'll be obvious to that person. And so that reminds me, one of the things they used to teach us, you mentioned thyroid disease, and there are several other things too. But, you know, we'd see patients, they would always ask us to ask the patients to look at the driver's license. So you could compare what they look like 2 years ago as compared to what they look like now to see if there's a change, for example, for thyroid problems where you see a change in the eyes and so forth. And but yeah, it is a lot of times family members are the ones that get these patients in because they notice something different and the patients don't notice it, or they're intentionally trying to minimize their symptoms and don't even realize that they're doing so, by basically modifying their activity and modifying what their daily patterns are just to sort of accommodate their symptoms.
It's interesting you say that, because there's a commercial and it's in regards, I think, to COPD, but this guy talks about having to tell his friends if they're going out, like they're going to a restaurant, you go ahead, I left my keys, or I got to go back to the car or something like that. And he says he does that so he can walk at his own pace, you know, because he can't
keep
up.
That's exactly it.
But,
exactly.
Yeah, but Yeah, but then, you know, it's gotten to the point where he can't do that anymore. So mm-hmm. I just thought it was interesting when you say, okay, you know, you're trying to camouflage what's really going on from everybody else until, you know, it's too late.
That's very common. It's very common in multiple different illnesses. It's very common. And it's a part of human psyche where you basically, you know, you're sick and you don't want to be sick. So you try to ignore it. And when you ask those patients, you know, what did you think it was? Did you think it was heart failure? Did you think it was a heart attack? Did you think it was, you know, whatever? They'll say, yeah. And you ask them, well, why didn't you come in to be treated? And they don't know. And then when they do answer, though, usually the most common answer I'll get is, I was scared. I was scared. And so it's just a part of human psyche.
I started noticing certain things myself, and I'm like, oh, no, I'm not going out like that. So I'm like, trying to do other things to kind of compensate. But anyway, we're going to take our final break. We are here with cardiologist Dr. Taiwan Tillman. It is Wellness Wednesday on G's Power Hour. If you have any questions or comments, the number is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back.
This is Douglas Dobbs, owner and funeral director at Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community with two generations of family funeral service. With the recent addition of my son Brandon, we are here to take care of the needs of Central and West Orlando. From simple cremation to a full burial, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here to help you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Hi, I'm Jim Garrison, and I think I found a way to help you understand what is Chill Out Jazz.
Some of y'all may be confused, because of the style we choose. We make jazz and R&B. We don't categorize, we just make what sound good, baby. Is it jazz?
It is what it is.
Is it R&B?
Tune in every Wednesday night at 10 on K-Ham Radio.
Are you sure?
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Be with us on Friday. I can't tell you anything about tomorrow yet. But anyway, be with us on Friday when we have the Diet Diva, Tara Collingwood here with us to, you know, prepare your questions and everything. We're going to talk with her. But in the meantime, we are here with Dr. Taiwan Tillman. And if you have questions or comments, the number is 516-387-1944. So I've interrupted you a lot, so I'm going to let you go ahead and take it because, you know, we'll try to get in as much as we can.
Yes, talking really fast because this is such a broad and diverse topic, but I'm going to slow down now, and we're going to talk about, in this last segment, about the treatment of heart failure, but more importantly, as individual patients and family members, how do you help manage heart failure? So the treatment of heart failure from the physician side is almost a cookbook sort of recipe of what we use, and it's all based on lots and lots of data that we know works. But the first thing is diagnosing the type of heart failure. So we've talked about the two types, weak heart versus stiff heart. So that's sort of easy to parse out up front. Once you figure that out, if there's an underlying problem like blockages or leaky valves or valves that don't open well, mechanical problems of the heart, you fix that. If there are blockages, you fix that. If there are other underlying problems such as untreated high blood pressure or alcoholism, excessive drug or illegal drug use, any of those things, you get rid of those things. So you're treating, if there's any type of underlying cause that you can treat, then you treat that. Okay? And then there are medications that we use for heart failure. So if there's a weakened heart, I'm just going to go over them quickly, but the doctors will take care of this part, but it's beta blockers, which is a type of medication. There's another medication that you've probably seen commercials for called Entresto, which is a very good heart failure medication. There are the diuretics, which is the Lasix and the other water pills that we mentioned earlier. There's some other different types of diuretics that we sometimes use as well. There's some of the diabetes medications that work really well for heart failure. We use those, and so there's a number of different medications that we use to treat heart failure. And those medications do several things. Sometimes they will help the heart muscle get stronger and recover. But one of the other things that they do is they reduce mortality. So heart failure has a very high mortality. We know that cardiovascular disease is a leading cause of death worldwide. About 30% of those cardiovascular disease deaths are from heart failure. So that's a big chunk of the cardiovascular disease deaths. And this, the medical therapy that we use, most of it has a mortality benefit. In other words, it reduces the death associated with heart failure. That's one of the things they were aiming to do. So most of the time with our medical therapy, our targets are, number one, reducing mortality, number two, improving functionality, and number three, decreasing recurrent hospitalizations. And basically all of the medications that we have that are proven to do those things, we have lots of data that they are proven to do those things. Believe it or not, diuretics is not one of those. The diuretics we mostly use to help minimize symptoms, but those other medications, the beta blockers and the Entresto and the different types of, and some of the other diuretics, not necessarily the Lasix, they do have the survival and benefit for patients to be able to function and go about their lives on a normal basis. And so that's the medical part. And I just wanted to gloss over that quickly because that's something that the doctors will help with. But then the patient part, this part is very important. If you have heart failure, whether it's mild heart failure, severe heart failure, your family member, whatever it may be, this is very important because this is the part that we can't help with and the part that most often leads to patients ending up with recurrent episodes of heart failure and recurrent hospitalizations. So what are the important things? Number one, most important thing is take your medications. A lot of patients will get their medications and they'll start feeling better and they decide they don't need them. They'll stop taking them. They end up back in the hospital. So number one, take your medications, take them as instructed. Sometimes the medications are expensive. If that's an issue, your doctor's office can always help. They can help with samples. A lot of times companies will give the medications away for free. If your income is below a certain level, they will have discount cards, lots of ways to get the medications for free. Most of the heart failure medications that we use are generic medications and are very inexpensive, but there are a few, like the diabetes medications that work well for heart failure and the Entresto that can be expensive, and we can usually work around that. So the first and most important thing is to take your medications, okay? The second thing is following
the instructions. So with the medication,
yes.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
So once you're on the medication, you can't get off?
If you have chronic heart failure, you're probably going to need to stay on those medications. They may get modified here and there, doses changed here and there, but typically once you're on them, those are medications that you're going to need, and they're important to stay on them. Once you stop them, the effect of the medication goes away. Now, there are times, for example, take, for example, someone that has COVID, that has viral cardiomyopathy and gets heart failure from COVID. You put them on the medications. You bring them back in 3 months, their heart function looks a little better. Bring them back in 6 months, the heart function looks completely normal, like this never happened. You may leave them on the heart failure meds for another 6 months to a year. Everything still looks good. Then they're off. Everything's back to normal. Their heart healed. So in those cases, they don't always need to stay on them. But if somebody had a heart attack and they have heart failure, or somebody had untreated hypertension for 30 years and their heart enlarged and the pumping function is now 20%, those patients typically aren't going to get better and will probably be on those heart failure medications for life.
Okay.
The other thing, a lot of times the symptoms of heart failure are related to fluid overload, excess fluid. One of the things that's extremely important, and you can talk to your make you hold on to fluid. So if you eat salt, and you probably know this yourself, if you go somewhere, say you go to a Chinese buffet and you eat a lot of food, you're going to have swelling that night because that salt that you eat is going to make your body hold on to fluid. Normally your kidneys, when you drink fluid, your kidneys will get rid of that fluid. But if your body has a lot of salt in it from what you ate that day, then your body's going to try and maintain the same concentration of salt as normal. So when you drink fluid, your body's going to hold on to that fluid to sort of dilute the salt that you eat. And so salt is like a sponge, and salt makes you hold on to fluid. In fact, the only thing that water pills do, like Lasix, for example, Lasix makes your kidneys spill salt. And when your kidneys spill salt, the salt passes through freely through your kidneys. It takes water with it. So it's not like they make you just get rid of water. They make you get rid of salt and water. That's why you get low sodium and low potassium from the water pills, because they make you get rid of those electrolytes to pull fluid with them. And so salt restriction is extremely important when it comes to heart failure diet. And so a low salt diet is the cardinal diet that you have to adhere to when you have heart failure. And so we're typically talking 2,000 to 2,500 milligrams of sodium total in a day. If you ever look at salt on the things that you eat, you'll realize that it's not a lot of salt, And you can run through that pretty quickly with a few pieces of bacon at breakfast if you really overdo it. And so that's one of the cardinal things that we try and tell our patients is salt, a salt-restricted diet, which can be very difficult, particularly if you're eating a lot of pre-processed or pre-prepared foods or canned foods and so forth. So we try and, you know, get our patients to use fresh ingredients rather than pre-prepared ingredients, rather than, you know, eating canned soup, make your own soup and freeze portions of it so you can eat that so you don't have to have so much salt. But basically anything that's pre-prepared and preserved that's going to last a long time on the shelf will have salt in it as a preservative. So we try and get patients to avoid that. Some of the other things that is very that are very important for patients, daily weights. So when you go home, if you have a hospitalization for heart failure and you have 20 pounds of fluid and they get all that fluid off, you're going to have what's called a dry weight. If your dry weight is 180 pounds, when you get home, you get on that scale and 180 pounds. Step on that scale every single day, whether it's when you get out of the shower, when you get out of bed, or whatever. Step on that scale every single day. As long as your weight is 180 pounds, you're doing fine. If your weight is 180 on Monday, 182 on Tuesday, 185 on Wednesday, you're starting to hold on to fluid. Call your doctor. They will generally give you some instructions to take a few extra doses of your water pill to get rid of the fluid so you don't end up in the hospital. If you don't do that, it's 85 on Wednesday and 190 on Friday the next week, you know, at 210, and now you got 30 pounds of fluid to get off, and you're in the hospital for a week or 2 weeks. And so it's very important for patients to do their part in helping to do these things. And it's also important for family members, because what happens is a lot of times these patients have family members that they're living with, and, you know, everybody's eating the same meals. And so you have to cook differently. You have to shop differently to accommodate the patients that have heart failure, because if you don't, then they're going to eat what you're eating, and they're going to end up with heart failure. And if that means cooking individual meals or cooking the same for everybody and then seasoning food once it hits the table, which is what most people do. And so it's important for family members to play a role as well.
So it's going to be a matter of you can't just all of a sudden say, okay, what do you want to eat tonight, everybody? You actually have to do meal plans.
You have
know,
to plan from the second you go to the grocery store. You shop differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most restaurants can accommodate that if you want something low sodium or you choose low sodium things on the menu. But most restaurants can accommodate that as well. Obviously, you know, Burger King and McDonald's can, but most other sit-down restaurants can. And it's not that you can't go to those places and eat some of those things, but you need to be mindful. If you do and you eat 1,500 milligrams at McDonald's, then 1,500 milligrams of sodium at McDonald's, you can't have any more salt the rest of the day, you know? So you can load it up at one time if you want, but then you're done for the day, and you have to be really mindful the remainder of the day.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that we often see. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and sometimes you can't depend on them to do the right thing. I hate to say that, but
that's
just
true.
Like asking for things, you know, I try to do decaffeinated beverages most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And coffee is one of those things that sometimes you don't know until it gets to your table. And they tell you they made decaffeinated coffee. And if you've done decaf after a while, or, you know, you can sometimes you can even smell it before you put it on your lips. It's like, this does not smell like decaf coffee. This doesn't. And then you get it on your lips like, nope. And you don't want to, you know, you have to kind of watch out for yourself. So you kind of do have to monitor it. So even if they say, you know, it doesn't have this, that, and the other, and you bring it to your table, like the doctor said, you just have to decide, are you going to go ahead and eat it? And then what's going to happen afterwards? How do you modify afterwards? So.
And I'll tell you what never changes. Thanksgiving, Christmas, heart failure admissions, the day after, the week after Thanksgiving, Christmas, because everybody gets together, family, everybody sees all this good food they really want to eat. A lot of us load it with salt, and they eat everything they want to eat that they don't normally eat. And then two days later, they're in the hospital. It's like the worst time in the hospital because you just have all these heart failure admissions.
Dr.
And it happens
Tony,
every year.
You've got to go. I hate this. We're going to have to definitely come back and do a part two. But thank you for your time. Thanks for breaking it down for some, at least some. And we're going to come back for some more at another time. And thank you all for listening. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I'm your host, G. Be well, be safe, be blessed. Hug a loved one. Take care of yourself, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.